This is Sam Sebrin from Athens, and you are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network in sports. There are updates. In updates, there are numbers. In numbers, there are sorrows. In sorrow, there is redemption. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network, this is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news. This is the network.
On Saturday, December 10th, the Athens Cultural Center puts on the 2022 Athens Victorian Stroll, a holiday tradition that's been gone for a few years because of the pandemic, but is back this year with all sorts of free activities from 1 p.m. in the afternoon through the evening. Take a stroll through the village, sample all sorts of food and drinks. Santa Claus will be around and carolers will be singing. That's at the 2022 Athens Victorian Stroll on Saturday, December 10th. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org for more information.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Raymond Pignone reports for Columbia Greene Media that the New York State Thruway Authority Board of Directors December 5th authorized next steps in the toll increase process. The Thruway Authority is proposing a 5% hike for EasyPass drivers beginning January 1, 2024. The Board of Directors must hold a series of public hearings on the proposal before the authority can formally adopt the increases. Hearings will be held throughout 2023. Under the proposal, beginning January 1, 2024, the base E-ZPass rate will increase by 5% outside of the Governor Mario M. Cuomo Bridge. A second 5% increase would take effect in January 2027. Authority Board of Directors Chairperson Joanna M. Maloney said that at the December 5th meeting that members are ready to listen to suggestions on alternative ways to raise funds needed to maintain and repair aging infrastructure. Statewide, tolls will remain frozen system-wide through 2023. If approved, this will be the first system-wide toll increase in 14 years. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Catskill High School reopened December 6th as heat and water were restored, but Catskill Middle School remained on virtual instruction after a water main issue. The school system's website said on December 6th that, and I quote, "water has been restored. However, the building's boiler room experienced significant flood damage and the building currently has no heat. We are still assessing the situation, but unfortunately it appears that it may take an extended period of time to get heat back into the building. As a result, CMS will be on virtual instruction Tuesday, December 6th until further notice. There will be no in-person instruction and students will report to classes online only," end quote. Computers for home use and meals are being distributed at middle school. Catskill Elementary School was not impacted by the water main issue.
Patricia Doxey reports for the Daily Freeman that Ulster County lawmakers adopted a county budget for 2023 that increases by $2 million the spending plan proposed by Acting County Executive Johanna Contreras. However, the property tax cut proposed in the executive plan will remain in place. The $381,342,516 budget was adopted by the legislature on a vote of 20-2 after lawmakers made more than two dozen changes to the plan as proposed by Contreras. The adopted budget increases spending by 8% or $28.4 million over the county's existing financial plan. Contreras said the budget, quote, "reinforces county government's commitment to serving our residents by investing in essential services and doing our part to relieve the financial pressures that residents are feeling," unquote. Legislator Joseph Maloney, a Democrat, criticized the budget as wasting spending too much of the taxpayers' money without regard for the future. He said legislators failed to do their due diligence in reviewing a spending plan by not looking, quote, "inward in the budget," unquote. Minority Leader Ken Ronk said, I quote, "I think there were missed opportunities. I think there were some misplaced priorities, but overall I think it was a good budget, and to me the positives outweigh the negatives," unquote. The budget adopted by legislators included the addition of $663,351 for the creation of an emergency services division within the Emergency Services Department, and the addition of $171,345 to cover the cost of pay raises for all the county's elected officials except the district attorney, whose salary is set by the state. Legislators also voted to add a second investigator in the district attorney's office. Another change was the elimination of the Constituent Service Navigator Division, created during the COVID-19 pandemic to respond to the hundreds of calls to the county for information and services, the creation of a centralized arraignment program, and additional funding for the Ulster County Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals spay-neuter program. Despite the increased spending, the adopted budget maintains the 3% reduction in the amount to be raised by taxes proposed in the executive plan. The budget now goes to Contreras for final consideration. She will have 5 days to either allow it to take effect or to veto any changes made by legislators. Read more about the story in the Daily Freeman.
Pete DeMola reports in the Times Union that the Coyman's Landing Marina was fined $49,724,000 in July after a fiery explosion last January that injured a worker. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration filed 4 violations against the marina because of the explosion that started after a welder inadvertently ignited an oil tank. Settlement talks with the federal agency eventually reduced the fine to $14,917. OSHA officials found that marina employees were improperly trained on hazardous chemicals in their work areas and that Coyman's Marina did not insist that cutters or welders and their supervisors were suitably trained. Carver Companies, the marina owners, did not respond for comment about their violations. Marina worker Eric Allen started the explosion in the boat shop, welding near a 275-gallon waste oil tank. Vapors caused the tank to explode, spraying oil within the blast radius. Allen suffered serious burns to his chest, abdomen, hands, arms, and torso, with Joe Gessner dragging out his co-worker and using a fire extinguisher to knock back the flames. Smoke from the fire could be seen miles away. Hours later, firefighters got the flames extinguished. Read the full story in the Times Union.
Mid-Hudson News reports that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has delayed by 2 years the deadline to acquire a real ID. The deadline for enforcement was scheduled for May 3, 2023, but has now been pushed to May 7, 2025. Under the amended Real ID regulations, beginning May 7, 2025, every traveler 18 or older must have a Real ID compliant driver's license or identification card, state-issued enhanced driver's license, or another TSA-acceptable form of identification at airport security checkpoints for domestic travel. The extension is necessitated in part because Real ID progress over the past 2 years was significantly hindered by state driver's licensing agencies having to work through backlogs created by the COVID-19 pandemic. States will now be able to give residents more time to get licenses and identification cards that meet security standards. Once the Real ID enforcement deadline passes, the law requires the Transportation Security Administration to not accept driver's licenses and identification cards that do not meet these federal standards. All 50 U.S. states, the District of Columbia, and 4 of the 5 U.S. territories covered by the law are issuing Real ID compliant driver's licenses and identification cards. Read more about the story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Kenneth C. Crow II reports in the Times Union that the floating solar array for Cohoes City Reservoir is not in the water yet, but Representative Paul Tonko wants to create similar projects across the nation. Tonko is introducing legislation for federal support to replicate the project. Tonko, a Democrat representing the 20th Congressional District, said on December 2nd, and I quote, "The innovative project in Cohoes shined a light on the advantages of floating solar to reach our nation's renewable energy goals and reduce bills for families and communities. Since the inception of this project, I've said that Cohoes Reservoir will serve as a model for the nation, and with my Power Our Reservoirs Act that I just introduced, it will do just that," end quote. Cohoes Mayor Bill Keeler predicts that the $5.9 million array with 8,000 solar panels will be floating in the fall of 2024 or the spring of 2025. Keeler said, and I quote, "We said from the start this could be a national model. We've been working with the congressman. He's been super enthusiastic and a great help to us financially," end quote. Tonko says a 2018 study by the National Renewable Energy Laboratory found that deploying floating solar on the county's more than 24,000 human-made reservoirs could save 2.1 million hectares of land and meet 10% of the country's electricity needs. Solar arrays in water cost more than land-based systems, but have other benefits, including reducing algal blooms. Read the full story in the Times Union.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, there will be rain, mainly before 1 p.m. The temperature high will be near 57 degrees. There will be a chance of showers on Wednesday night, mainly before 10 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy, with a temperature low of around 42 degrees. And on Thursday, partly sunny, with a high near 50 degrees. And Thursday night, partly cloudy, with a temperature low of around 30 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Wednesday, December 7th, we have all sorts of live programming at WGXC 90.7 FM, including at 11 a.m., Mayuko Fujino hosts the Mirage Station show live from the WGXC Acre studio. Then at noon, we head to Catskill, where the Bedazzled Radio Hour goes for 2 hours. Spike Priggen live at his Spike's Record Rack on Main Street in Catskill. At 4 p.m., the WGXC Afternoon Show is live from Acre. At 7 p.m., the Off the Hook Show is live from New York City in Brooklyn, where it's simulcast from WBAI from the Hacker Quarterly 2600, talking all sorts of technology. And then at 8 p.m., we're live from Hudson with Rock and Roll High School from Peter McPartland and Anya Kanovskaya. At 10 p.m., we're live from Ulster County with Jeff Economy and Snack Point Charlie Show. And after the local news at midnight, we stay in Ulster County with Go Go Kitty, the show from Peter Aaron, who used to live in Hudson but now lives in Kingston. We simulcast, pick up the simulcast of the Radio Kingston show, Go Go Kitty, that also airs on WGXC after midnight on 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Learn to administer Narcan and reverse the effects of an opioid overdose at a training every third Tuesday of the month at 10 a.m. at the Hudson Area Library. That's this month, Tuesday, December 20th, from 10 to 11 a.m. at the Hudson Area Library. Learn how to administer Narcan and reverse the effects of an opioid overdose. Find out more about this event and many others on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Next time you find yourself using a rideshare, make it more interesting. Ask the driver to put on 90.7 FM, WGXC Acre, radio for open ears.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, December 7th. Believe it or not, local early morning temperatures range from 48 degrees in Phoenicia to 56 in Copaig. Regional average soil temperature has taken an uptick and reached 42 degrees. That's 2 inches down. Snow is falling today 300 miles away north of Montreal, and as you can tell, it wants nothing to do with our soggy local weather, as rain chances take all day to clear out and we get a high of 58 at 2 p.m. Overnight, things start to dry out and cool off. We hit a low of 42 degrees. Then wake up tomorrow to some moderate wind gusts. Then we see a brief break in the temperature drop with a high of 46 degrees at noon. Overnight, we're looking at 28 degrees. Then Friday, we'll see a high of 40. Saturday, similar, dry and hitting 41 degrees. Look out, though. Precipitation comes back on Sunday. In what form is still anyone's guess. Sunset today will be at 4:11 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:07 a.m. Looking way up, we see adjustments to predictions put the approaching solar wind arrival for Friday. Solar wind speed is currently 373 kilometers per second at 11.6 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 15 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board with good conditions below 10 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1.3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 123, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Pat of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Johann Sebastian Bach. Toot, 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 toot
Everywhere goes my heartstrings, and you can go to where.
What?
Timmy Thompson. 1, 2, 3. Hello? Why are you playing this? Oh, why? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, dokey. Hello? Below? Oh. Am I on the air? Sorry. Oh my God, I got distracted. Santa Claus was trying to get down the chimney.
I'd been trapped into agreeing to have dinner with a man I'd been avoiding literally for years.
You look terrific.
Okay, thank you.
I got around to asking him what he'd been up to in the last few years.
I am your true Nikola Tesla.
What do you mean?
I even had this idea about, you know, the connection of big pharma to farms.
Tell me about it.
By having localized farms.
Huh.
A group of people have control and say so that just so happen to be Jewish. And they're all in cahoots. I don't know, is that too heavy-handed to put on this platform?
Do you want to know my actual response to all this?
Okay.
Those remarks were just full of hostility.
Have I reached Alex Jones territory yet? I love Hitler. If I had said that before you drank the coffee, it's hard for people to even listen to you.
I don't really know what you're talking about.
This is the issue when you hire atheists. I will eventually be president, you know, in my lifetime. Yeah, you know, Hitler has a lot of redeeming qualities. He had a really cool outfit and stuff, and he was a really good architect. And he didn't kill 6 million Jews. That's just, like, factually incorrect. Luckily for everyone, they could just write it off that, you know, I'm crazy.
Well, why do you think that is?
Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives. Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Remember when FDR, from his wheelchair, said every week,
set on Pearl Harbor. This is a date that will live in infancy, because, you know, like infants cry a lot, so when you get very sad on a very sad day, you cry like an infant, sometimes like a dog also. But today is maybe the worst day in American history, and there's been a lot of bad days since Sleepy Joe took over, but this is the worst. I honestly think this is the worst, because what you have is first the fake January 6th losers, that's what we call them, the losers. They made a referral. Oh, we're referring. Oh, what is this? Do you have to get like a, you know, Obamacare specialist? Like, oh, you have to see your primary care fake committee and then make a referral to a new committee for criminal charges. So that happens. Total disgrace. And then the fake news went crazy because a business that I don't know very well called Trump Org was convicted of various crimes. And they said, oh, look at you, Donald Trump, your company. And I go, what company? No, Trump Org. His last name is Org. It's like the left doesn't even know how names work. My name is Donald J. Trump, okay? Mr. Trump, if you're nasty. Mr. Org obviously gave himself the first name Trump as a sort of tribute, which I like, which I respect. But if he did crimes, then Mr. Org is going to prison or paying fines, not Mr. Trump. It's like they don't even know how names work. And now tonight, they're hoping for a hat trick of hate, because they want Raphael, the worst of the Ninja Turtles, to take the seat in Georgia, a very strong red Trump state. But I'm confident they're not going to get their third nasty victory, because O.J. Simpson, a great friend, a great football player, he's going to win that seat for me so strongly tonight, and we're going to make all the people who are running to Ron DeSantis look so stupid. So, Walter Payton, go get that win for your president, and we'll see what happens.
Say, who's got trouble?
We got trouble.
How much trouble?
Too much trouble.
Well, now, don't you frown. Just knuckle down and knock on wood. Who's unhappy?
We're unhappy.
How unhappy?
Too unhappy.
Uh-oh, that won't do. When you are blue, just knock on wood. Who's unlucky?
We're unlucky.
How unlucky?
Too unlucky.
But your luck'll change if you'll arrange to knock on wood. Who's got nothing?
We got nothing.
How much nothing?
Too much nothing.
Say, nothing's not an awful lot, but knock on wood. Now, who's happy?
We're happy.
Just how happy?
Very happy.
That's the way we're gonna stay, so knock on wood. Now, who's lucky?
We're all lucky.
Just how lucky?
Very lucky.
Well, smile up then, and once again, let's knock on wood.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. December 7th, the U.S. Supreme Court hears oral arguments in Moore v. Harper, a case testing the independent state legislature theory. So, what could happen if the majority embraces this theory? At stake is whether state legislatures have ultimate authority over elections. Higher authority than the U.S. Constitution and statutes, higher than state Supreme Courts and constitutions, and higher than a governor's veto. The U.S. Supreme Court has already said in 2019 that only state courts have the authority to decide partisan redistricting cases. That decision essentially green-lighted widespread gerrymandering we saw in the 2020 redistricting process. The Brennan Center for Justice and other scholars suggest citizen ballot initiatives could be nullified. State legislatures could ignore U.S. or state constitutions' voting right provisions and establish unchecked barriers to voting. Existing state laws like early voting and voting by mail could be repealed without the check of a gubernatorial veto. Some scholars have suggested that legislatures could change the electors for a presidential election or overturn election results. Democracy 21's Fred Wertheimer says this is unlikely, but that Congress should pass the Electoral Count Reform Act to close that loophole. In short, the impact of Moore versus Harper could reshape American democracy, and it could be one of the most consequential and destructive Supreme Court decisions of our time. Find out more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We are not sure if this journey is over tonight or if there's still a little work yet to do. But here's what we do know. We know that when they're finished counting the votes from today's election, that we're going to have received more votes than my opponent.
Senator Raphael Warnock spoke on the night of the November general election and told supporters he expects the same results in Tuesday's runoff against Herschel Walker. A record number of early votes were cast in the runoff. U.S. Capitol Police officers were awarded congressional gold medals for their heroism in the January 6th attack. D.C. Police Chief Robert J. Conte III spoke about how the officers will never forget that day.
Many of us still carry the physical, mental, and emotional scars after that mob of thousands launched a violent assault in an attempt to halt the counting of electoral ballots.
Representative Benny Thompson, chair of the House subcommittee investigating the attacks, said criminal referrals will be made based on the committee's findings. A report is expected to be released sometime before Christmas. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said time is running out to reach an agreement about a deal to fund the government. The current continuing resolution expires December 16th.
Time is ticking. We have not been able to agree on a top line yet, and I think it's becoming increasingly likely that we may need to do a short-term CR into early next year. We're running out of time, and that may end up being the only option left that we could agree to pursue.
Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said passing a budget will be an imperative goal of the lame duck Congress. He added there is bipartisan support and stressed the importance of the new National Defense Authorization Act.
This isn't an easy process, but it's important nonetheless for the well-being of our troops, for the preservation of our national security, for the tens of millions of Americans who look to the federal government for a wide range of basic services.
A jury in New York found the Trump Organization guilty of conspiracy, criminal tax fraud, and falsifying business records. Lawyers for the company said they will appeal. The Trump Organization is still the subject of a criminal investigation by New York State Attorney General Letitia James. Tomorrow, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in the case of Moore v. Harper, which could shift the way American democracy operates. A ruling in the case would allow for the creation of hyperpartisan voting districts, which cannot be challenged under judicial review by state courts. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I turn into a teenage Goo Goo Mop. Yeah, I cruise through the city and I roam the streets, looking for something that is nice to eat. You better duck when I show up. We'll be right back.
Unsilent Night is an original composition by Phil Klein, written specifically to be heard outdoors in the month of December. He's been holding them at various cities around the world since 1992, special composition for boombox radios, where multiple speakers make one shimmering seasonal composition. This year, one of the locations for Unsilent Night is in Kingston, New York. That's on December 16th from 6 to 7 p.m. Go to unsilentnight.com for more information about the specific location that will be announced shortly. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about all sorts of local events.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
You want to tell me for Hudson Mohawk Magazine what you think about the public art?
Good.
What else? What did you think about them? What did you think they looked like?
Like beads, just the bones of it.
Looks like bones of what?
Beads.
Beads. Huh. We saw of the other sculptures too. Do you want to? Oh, we got a favorite.
Yeah. Oh yeah. What's your favorite?
Which one did you like best? We've seen
I
a couple.
Like the Christmas tree.
Classic.
I like the one by the church.
Sunday evening was the opening of Troy Glow, a public art project in downtown Troy, where several artists from the region have installed their creations using light in different ways to illuminate and say something interesting about the space they're in. Adam Freeland is an artist with a piece in the exhibit, as well as the artistic and technical director of Troy Glow.
Troy Glow is the first light festival that we've ever had a chance to do in Troy. And the idea for it came after a project that I was involved with in 2016 in the area called Breathing Lights. And that was a big lighting project that put an effect in about 200 vacant buildings in the area. And it was a big undertaking. All three cities were involved, lots and lots of people, lots of layers to it. But afterwards, a lot of the cities, I think, got a sense of the reward from it. And some of them had reached out to certain people on the team about what to do next. And Judy Gilmore, who's the curator on Troy Glow now, came up with a public art plan for Troy. And I think the first thing on the list was to do a light festival. Most light festivals are an open call situation that's often nationally or even internationally in scope. And so normally people who already work in light are, you know, they've got their stuff ready to go. And so they apply and say, here's the thing I want to put in. And that's how it often the curation of those kind of projects go. But in our case, we wanted this to be a regional endeavor. And that meant actually teaching some artists how to incorporate light into their practice. So that made this quite different because, I mean, a few of the artists we work with to some degree had worked in light, but either they hadn't or they'd never made art that went outdoors. And so there was like a real educational component for each of the artists that were involved.
How did your piece, which is displayed on Broadway and Franklin Alley, come about?
What happened was the Arts Center in the Capital Region, who spearheaded this endeavor, the director, Liz Reese, reached out to me and said, hey, we're interested in doing this and we'd like you to be a part of it in some ways. And so I had to sort of determine what role I would play, but we decided to do a prototype project to sort of like figure out working in with the city and working in the downtown area and everything. And so I was able to kind of envision some things ahead of time. But when it came time for this iteration of it, they had drawn up a map. I think the Business Improvement District was involved and said, we really want to draw attention to a particular part of the downtown area. So we'd like the projects to be tightly grouped in this area. And we would like Adam's piece to be on this main street. And that street is great. But the first idea for a project I had, it just wasn't even possible. I wanted to anchor something the length of the block, but it just requires like all these logistics to fall in place and it wasn't possible. So then I realized I had to centralize the project to one location. And for, you know, as an artist, like often you have certain like references that keep coming up in your research. And one that kept coming up in mine was, you know, signage that's like a whole bunch of lit or non-lit signs in a particular place. And there are a couple locations in the world where this is really prominent: Tokyo, Hong Kong, Taiwan, like where you get this beautiful cluster of signage. And I thought, well, wouldn't this be kind of interesting? I mean, there used to be so much of a different type of signage in Troy. But I wanted to harken back to sort of a 50s, 60s era of early illuminated signs. And so I began just coming up with a design of a series of shapes that were pretty prevalent for signage and figuring out how to sort of put them in one place so they created a little bit of a density. But of course, mine didn't really require any content. So the piece ended up being called Empty Sign. So it's a series of 8 illuminated shaped light boxes that are mounted to the corner of one downtown building. This was really different than the way that I normally work. So I found myself in a similar position of a lot of the other artists where even though it was something like what we'd done before, there were many parts about it where we're like, oh, this is completely new. And I don't normally work with anything that has a light effect running through it very often. In this case, we had all these boxes and I was like, well, what do I do with them? Like what happens with them? And I have a friend who creates scores for film, and I decided to sort of sit down with him and pick his brain and say, if there are 8 signs, they're kind of 8 components, what could kind of happen over time? And so we started coming up with this visual score. And the score just has a very simple narrative arc in which all the signs seem to be operating independently in the way they normally would if you were in a dense urban area and each sign was trying to get your attention. But then slowly over time, they actually start to fall into synchronicity with one another. And then they go through this sort of pattern of intensity of working together. And then afterwards, it starts to slow down and they start to fall back into their individual rhythms. And then the cycle starts again. So one other piece that's on the Art Center that's quite interesting is a piece by Adam Tinkle. I think it's called Troy Farallon. He kind of created a version of a sort of abstracted, glitchy digital town square clock. And it's just kind of a circle that rotates within this kind of like field of feedback in a way. And, you know, it definitely feels like something from a little bit of a different world or a different time. And then every hour on the hour, it starts chiming, but the chime has kind of a feedback of its own. And the clock text starts coming up all in front of the clock, like reminders in a way, like real, like practical reminders, other ones that have to do with something more kind of emotive or cerebral or psychological. But a lot of them have to do with light, getting like a dose of light for the day. And it's kind of a beautiful thing. Like it really integrates well with the architecture.
On Sunday, standing at St. Paul's Church on 3rd Street, I ran into Lydia Kern, who is the artist who's installed her piece, Efflorescence, there.
That word means to bloom. The inside, it kind of looks like quilted stained glass. So my process started by collecting plants and flowers that were grown in the Capital Region on nature walks, or like bouquets from the Albany Co-op that were grown by local farmers here. And I had a giant flower press in my studio. And I pressed all the plants. And then I use vinyl fabric to hand sew all the flowers in place. And then I poured boat resin over the quilt.
So those are real flowers and plants,
yeah,
all embedded in the resin, and it looks like stained glass, kind
yeah,
of, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's really fitting to put it in the churchyard, right? Was that a purposeful choice?
Yeah, I usually do like a more of a rounded top, but I made it in line with the architecture of the building. And if you look at some of those like wooden shapes at the top there,
yeah,
are echoed in some of this. And I'm into medieval manuscripts and the way that like this shape, the holes in the piece echo some holes in those historic documents too. And so, yeah,
that's awesome. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Do you have any thoughts about public art on a whole or anything like that, being a part of this?
I love public art because I think it's a really generous art form. Like, it's given to everyone and you don't have to walk into a gallery to see it. And I do love the way it like just changes the environment. And I love that you don't have to be an art person per se,
right,
to go experience it. And I think that's like the land too, you know, like the land and the wildflowers that are in this piece offer themselves to everyone as well. And it's like a unifying aesthetic And usually stained glass, like the light is, the way stained glass is made, when light goes in, they're only illuminated if you're on the inside of the church. So I wanted to flip that and have it illuminated for everybody out here.
As people wandered by, I asked one passerby for their interpretation.
Well, it could be leaves, or it could be eyes, but apparently it kind of looks like a body, and then there's two eyes up there. So like a bug, maybe, with eyes not on the body.
The Troy Glow installations stay up into January around downtown Troy. Reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagin.
If you looked at it, counting the orange, it kind of looks like a shield.
Yeah, I can see that too. Cool, thanks.
So it could be a shield.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On Saturday, December 10th, the Brooklyn-based label Pure Magnetic brings its musical artists and collaborators to Catskill for an evening of tape-infused lo-fi, lowercase sound design, and glacial ambient soundscapes. There'll be performances from Hotel Neon, Taylor Dupree, Blank Forms, Chet Doxis, and Mika Frank, among others, at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, Saturday, December 10th. Turn out or tune in to a WGXC live web stream at WGXC.org of the event. From 8 to 11 p.m., Saturday, December 10th, at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about this and many other local events. Next, we have new music from Floating Points. This is the 2022 track Vocoder on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you. Vocoder from Floating Points on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.